Hi there. Welcome to Dice Hard with a Vengeance. What can I help you with today?
Hey, I'm kind of hoping I could get some advice on RPGs. I'm thinking of starting up a new gaming group.
Well, you definitely came to the right place. So what type of game are you thinking? AD&D? D&D 3.5? Maybe Pathfinder?
Well, I've been watching a group play on YouTube, and it seemed really fun, but I'm not quite sure what game it is they use.
Ah. Ah-ha-ha. Okay, I see. You're one of those. Well, if you'll follow me right over here, we have a wonderful selection that I think would be just your speed.
This is the children's board game section.
I think you'd be happy with, say, a Clue Junior. You can pick any one of these colorful characters and tell whatever stories you'd like without bothering any of the people in the actual RPG community.
Excuse me, I came here for an RPG, not to be disrespected like this.
Look, you fake geeks only know about our beloved hobby because of internet celebrities. If we were to accept just anyone into our ranks, it would be anarchy. How could the industry survive an influx of new, interested, paying customers if they didn't first know the sublime joy of figuring out Thaco?
I just want to get together with my friends and tell some fun stories. What's wrong with that?
Oh, is that all? You are like a child. If that's all you want, then you're a robber and I'm a cop. Why don't I chase you around the store? Bang, bang. Oh, isn't this delightful fun?
Please stop poking me with your finger and saying bang.
No. Oh my God, Dave, what the hell are you doing? I was just finger banging this customer. You realize how that sounds, right?
I do not.
Hey, I'm sorry. This is just Dave. He doesn't actually work here, and I can't seem to get him to just leave. Here, hold on. Hey, Dave, I heard someone mention they like 4th edition Dungeons & Dragons over there.
What? Why, they might as well be playing World of Warcraft with a keyboard that has a picture of a cow and a duck on it. I'll fix their little wagons and explain to them how fighters
Thanks.
Can only do
that
one
guy
thing
was
once a day.
The That's literal fine. Worst.
So, how can I help you?
Well, I'm looking for a good game for streaming, like some of my favorite internet shows. You know, something like Fate or Monster Hearts?
Oh, of course. Here, please follow me.
Okay, well, now we're just standing out in front of the store?
Indeed we are. Here's a ball. Perhaps you'd like to bounce it until you're ready to play a real game, like a grown-up. Don't make me get the hose.
But I...
The hose!
Anyway, folks, the reason that we've brought you all together today for a special afterthought, which, as you probably all well and truly
you
know...
You may be wondering why I've gathered you all together. Well, the murderer is in this very room.
The murderer is in this very hot air balloon.
Oh, my.
So, like I was saying, as you probably are fully cognizant, Afterthought's been canceled for a long goddamn time now, so we can spend more time talking about dumb Star Wars books. But every once in a while, we have a need. A reason to drag it back up out of the murk and to make up another intro and answer all your dumb questions. We do these things for you and for us when we really need to.
Do things for you and us when we need promotion.
We don't. We already hit our goal. We're good.
Yeah, fuck it.
This is for someone else.
In fact, fuck it. We're canceling it right now.
And we're out. Thank you for listening. No, but the reason we're here is to perform an interview with the author of and designer of Flying Circus, the role-playing game that we've probably already promoted the top and bottom of the hour today. That's Erica Chappell, who is waiting patiently right now to actually say something over the mic. So, Erica, say hello.
Hi. I was spending most of that time trying not to giggle myself to death and, like, debating turning off the mic so I could actually laugh.
No, it's better if you do the Paul F. Tompkins thing and just sort of guffaw in the background.
There's, like, little tiny waves in my Audacity track that's just me, like, dying on the inside.
So this all came together, what, about 2 weeks ago when we noticed a Kickstarter alert on Twitter from friend of the show, Erica, here, who's actually a very big friend of the show because she's the one who designed the only System Mastery role-playing game that exists so far.
The one and only.
Yeah, I mean, the one that's officially branded towards System Mastery. I mean, of course, Duckman does exist. It's out there. It floats in the ether. But the official System Mastery role-playing game. So when we saw that Erica was designing a role-playing game that is something that's near and dear to my heart, because I'm a big old airplane nerd,
You are.
I had to retweet and promote, and Erica quickly pointed out that this has to exist just because we have been dawdling on blimpleggers for far too long. So I responded with, well, you can just put blimpleggers in your game if you want, and now here we are.
Yep. Yeah. See, the thing is that a lot of people say hypothetical games to me, and they forget the fact that I just do them. Like, if the idea holds my interest for more than about half an hour, the game's already done. I'm sorry.
So, I mean, blimpleggers ultimately was never going to exist without assistance, because, you know, despite how many role-playing games we've read, that is not the first step towards becoming an expert at designing them.
Yeah, the first step is not being a huge lazy bitch.
The first step for me was playing Dark Heresy and fucking hating it.
That's the right choice. Yeah, man.
It's a good step to take.
Grimdark. So, let's see, Erica, you're actually an accomplished designer of role-playing games. You've got a couple under the belt, right?
Yeah, a few.
More than one, right?
Yeah, so I had, like, I go on streaks of just, like, publishing a bunch of stuff in a row and then, like, lethargically recharging somewhere until I get my next, like, burst of inspiration. So, mm-hmm. like, in terms of books, I've got 4, like, print books that are variously available on DriveThruRPG or whatever convention I happen to drag myself to. So there's those exist. And then there's just piles and piles of, like, my crazed ramblings of weird shit that I wrote, like, you know, in an afternoon. I was like, hey, I should make a game that, like, resembles those 80s animes where everything breaks and they send incompetent sci-fi people in to fix them, like Dirty Pair or whatever, and then I just fucking wrote that. Or, like, hey, I should write a 40-page-long Matrix game as a Patreon monthly game that's supposed to go towards one-page RPGs. Or I should write a series of games about movies about Arnold Schwarzenegger. Or I should buy a boat. Copyright infringing 100-page expansion to my very serious Vietnam War game that makes it Star Wars.
We have that same problem with copyright infringement because, of course, the only game we've ever written between the two of us is Duckman, and it turns out it's really hard to get a hold of Klasky Supo these days.
Oh, man.
So, okay. What we are talking about today, though, is Flying Circus, the game that you actually have on Kickstarter as we speak.
Yeah.
In fact, it's doing extraordinarily well.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. At the time of this recording, with about 22 days left to go, I think, it's something like 400% funded?
Yeah, it's something like that. Yeah, it is absurd and unnecessary, perhaps, and I'm very grateful to everybody who decided to throw some money and time and eyeballs at it.
So it all looks really interesting to me. I mean, you've sent us the playtest materials, which I've had just about enough time to skim, but not enough where I'm going to bring anything up from them because I just get it wrong anyway.
That's fine.
Yeah, but in essence, it's a heavily modified, powered by the apocalypse hack that has a strong lean towards controlling aircraft.
Yeah,
I mean, there's still rules for playing the pilots down on the ground, but there's a lot of material that's dedicated towards making air combat fun and interesting.
Basic and fun, interesting, and the other part was, like, not on a 2D map, which is just like the worst thing that can happen to aircraft.
Oh yeah, I mean, ultimately, one of the questions I was going to ask is you know, Erica, I've played many dozens of role playing games over the years, and no one has ever designed a competent vehicle system ever. What are you going to do different?
I mean, do you want to do that right now? Because, like,
no, we'll get into it.
Cool.
So what you're saying is that it's got a bit more of a 3D feel to it, or is it more of a loose feel in terms of how the airplanes are interacting with each other?
It's a little bit of both, and no.
And no.
No, sir. Pass.
The core thing that makes it, like, feel like airplanes instead of feeling like driving trucks around, but you happen to have, like, a battlefield map that looks like, you know, 10,000 feet above France, is that there are you don't play with a map whatsoever. It's just theater of the mind. So in that sense, it's kind of loosey-goosey in terms of, like, you know, relative positioning in 2D space and, like, who's chasing who and stuff can just be, you know, whatever the GM describes. And there's, like, rules in there to make it so the GM doesn't go crazy trying to track where everything is. But the simple thing of, like, pilots can only see what they're paying attention to. And the moment you stop paying attention to something, it disappears and the GM can bring it back later.
Good. Your game lacks object permanence.
Yeah, but I mean, as somebody who plays a lot of flight simulators and reads a lot of memoirs, pilots lack object permanence because, like, man,
well, I got a lot of other things to think about.
Yeah, it's hard enough to remember which way is up in an aircraft, never mind where the other 400-mile-an-hour moving object went.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing that I decided was that the positions that matter are actually the things that matter to real pilots, which is the stuff that's on an instrument panel, your airspeed and altitude.
Okay.
So that's what the game is built around, having concrete numbers for those things and then letting you be freeform and maneuver how you want in the more exciting dogfighting portion of it. So this both lets you like describe whatever crazy Top Gun action that you want, and it just fits into Powered by the Apocalypse's move structure, and also gives you like really concrete like the actual rules of aircraft fighting and like energy fighting and stuff. Like, you know, if you turn too much, your airspeed falls too low, and then it's like, oh, do I stall? Do I go into a dive and put the other person at an altitude advantage? Like all the actual considerations that real pilots have to worry about.
Okay. So, for example, if you slow down too much, you can go into a stall, which can lead into a flat spin, which can lead you into an unrecoverable power dive, all kinds of things like that.
Exactly, yeah. Or, like, you dive a lot to get speed, but then you dive too much, and, you know, like, you've built up enough speed that when you try to pull up into your combat maneuver, your wings snap like dry twigs because your plane is made of balsa wood.
Fair enough. I mean, that's going to have happened to a lot of the old Sopwiths and what have you, so, yeah, I'm on board.
Oh, yeah, and you can, of course... if you go into a tailspin, you can win it in a minute if you spin, spin, spin it.
Now, how detailed are your rules at the moment for the Sea Duck?
Okay, so you asked me this, and I actually...
The answer is very.
I actually fucking ran this as a tailspin for a podcast a few weeks ago.
Nice.
It can do... any aircraft. If you've seen an aircraft that could conceivably on any level plausibly fly, you can build it in this system.
Ooh, I really want to test that theory with my knowledge of dumb airplanes. I already know that you've got autogyros. I've heard that you've put the rules in for those.
Mm-hmm.
And autogyros don't even count as dumb airplanes. Autogyros are pretty smart when you get right down to it.
Cool.
Okay, I'm going to hit you with some tough ones. You ready?
All right.
The Avro Aerocar.
Cars aren't really a thing in the universe.
Fair
so
enough.
That's fair.
Okay. So the Avro Aero car is basically, for people who have no idea what the hell any of us are talking
about. Oh, wait, is that the little flying, stand thing that the guy stood on and with the big propeller under the bottom?
Yeah, that's one of the prototypes for it, yes.
It does that. Yeah, it can do that.
Yeah. So the Avro Aero car is basically if a 1960s UFO was driven by an army guy.
Yeah.
Like right in the top in the middle. Like it looks like if a UFO was in one of those like demolition derby PlayStation games, like Rogue Trip or something. Yeah.
It can do that. And it can do like any kind of flying disc, like the flying flapjack.
Perfect.
Whatever.
Okay. The XF2Y1. Yeah. Hell yeah. What about the, this is a tricky one. Ekranoplans.
Yes.
Oh shoot. Well, that's good. So the Ekranoplan, if people don't know, is the wing and ground effect airplane. They can fly a few dozen yards off the ground, but that's about it because they don't really have wings so much as they make pillows of air to sit on.
Yeah, well, same. See, all aircraft do that. Like ground effect is a consistent effect for all aircraft, and when the Wright brothers plane took off the first time at Kitty Hawk, it didn't actually manage to leave the ground effect like radius to the ground or whatever the fuck.
Yeah,
so
no,
like
didn't get...
there is you can fly like as a technique you can do even outside of an Ekranoplan, which is like a thing you can build. You can fly low enough to have additional lift if you're skimming the treetops.
Nice, you can get a little bounce off ground effect. That's awesome. Okay, so
all right, now let me give you another difficult one.
Mm.
Can you have a plane? I don't know anything about planes.
John's stuck on the sidelines, quietly launching jokes into the ether.
Just quietly browsing Twitter while this happens.
I forgot to put airplanes into this game. Yeah, that's the problem.
Oh,
I spent all this time building like fucking helicopters and orthocopters and fucking whatever the fuck else. This is an airplane game where using the same system for building airplanes, you can build blimps and hot air balloons. Like, that's... That I think should, you know, those weird like flying tube planes that they messed with in the 20s. Yeah, they can do
I
that.
Sure do. Yeah, there's still a couple. That, okay, so
they're wacky and waving and inflatable.
They
yeah,
are.
I got those.
Yeah,
no,
basically.
This is really neat. This is someone's taking a wild adaptation of Bernoulli's principles of lift into converting the wing into basically a rolling pin.
Yes, you can do that too. Yeah.
Yeah. There's still a couple of ships in the world that are powered by the same principle. That
yeah.
instead of having propellers under the water, they just have these four giant rotating towers up top. So yeah, that's sort of a rad thing that you could definitely incorporate into a game. I don't think anyone's ever built one that worked, but damn, what a great idea.
Yeah, I mean, the part where things actually work is less important to me than the parts where things would look like they work
like
enough
they should.
That I can look up what their principles and like strengths and weaknesses would be.
Oh no, absolutely. Which of course means that you need to put ornithopters in there.
They are super in. And
perfect.
They are a really good way to spend a lot of money trying to get your airplane to fly.
Oh, that's weird, because normally ornithopters cost zero and are 0-2 flyers. Magic the Gathering. Fuck you. I'll bring my knowledge into this.
See, I was getting ready for you to drop a Dune reference, but instead we did a Magic the Gathering one.
Man, I'm yeah, that was a goddamn.
Okay, so I guess we've successfully established you can build all kinds of airplanes.
Yes, we have successfully established that you are fucking nerds. Thank you.
Yep.
Oh wait. Okay, for John, is it possible to build the Go-Go Gadget copter?
like popping out of your head?
Uh-huh.
No, unfortunately.
Oh, no.
You can have wingsuits.
Oh, that's something.
and I mean, I'm adding helicopter backpacks for blimpleggers.
There you go. That's all you need.
We'll just work using the plane rules, just like the wingsuits.
Yeah. I mean, we need... So, in blimpleggers, there is one character class, a group of engineers that live out in the vast plains of, like, not Oklahoma, not Kansas, and what have you, that operate using little backpacks that they use so they can fly up and do repair work on blimps while they're parked at fueling stations. So there are a couple dudes who have a helicopter technology that is just sort of their backpacks, but it's all part of our silly fantasy setting, which we'll get to soon. Okay, so tell me about the Kickstarter.
Cool. So the Kickstarter is a couple of things. The sort of the overriding thing that this Kickstarter is like my first Kickstarter with all those words capitalized. Like, you know, I could probably have made this game with less detail and time invested and, like, cool 3D models just on my own. Like, I've self-published before. But I want to do grander things in the future. So I was like, man, I should really learn to fuck this up with a 2D game. Or not 2D, like a black and white book that, like, if something goes wrong, I'll just go hideously into debt and fix it instead of I will sell myself to, like, I don't know, pirates in order to avoid the tax
you'll be fine.
So
everyone,
that was a tortured sentence, but the point is that this is a learning experience for me. So I was like, yeah, maybe I'll hit my goal of like $5,000 and I can learn how to ship things and stuff and it won't be a big deal. So I fucked that one up right out the gate. But the other thing that it is it's like an opportunity to really invest a lot of, to pay off the investment of time that I put into this stupid thing that was originally supposed to take a month and a half to write.
Sure.
And to like get a chance to make this into the sort of do justice to the amount of weird plane bullshit that just bats around in my head because airplanes are really cool.
Oh, yeah, for reals. I mean, literally, the moment I started reading this, I was like, okay, what do I have to do to start designing some of my favorite World War II airplanes in this game?
Yeah, and the answer is get to the stretch goal that everyone got to almost immediately, where there's World War II stuff.
Right. Like, I mean, I'm talking, I want that airplane from World War II where, I can't remember the name of the damn thing, but where the pilot lies down in it, and the whole point of the airplane was it had magnesium hardened wingtips. And the plane was designed to fly through enemy airplanes.
Oh, yeah. That's super in.
All right, perfect.
Yeah, that Wing Blades was like one of the first things that got added when I was adding weird weapons.
Yeah, and the fact that someone actually built one once instead of it just being a crazy fantasy concept is just, that's what I loved so much about World War II it was one of the few periods in aviation history where they were like, yeah, we'll try it, sure,
yeah.
Whatever.
Well, I mean, that's true of basically anything. Like, if somebody said, like, I have a weird, like, I'll build you a battleship out of sandpaper and ice, and they went, here's money, give it a shot, you know?
Get it done. We'll build an aircraft carrier that goes underwater. All right, sure, let's do it.
Yeah. So, you know, and especially, like, everything that Germany produced during the Second World War of just, like, what if a helicopter with rockets on the tips of the rotors to make it go rotary?
Oh, the Triflugel. Okay. Yeah, you've got to get the Triflugel in.
I mean, they tried to do everything except the smart things that might have made any kind of difference at all.
Oh, yeah, anytime they got close, they found a way to mess it up, which is another great thing about World War II history.
And
yeah.
My own history.
It's also the history of John. You see, John designed the ME-262 Schwalbe fighter, but then when he presented it to Hitler, Hitler was like, no, make it a bomber. And thus, the World War II was lost.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
So
yeah,
okay.
There are rocket planes and pulse jet engines and stuff in this, by the way.
That's
but they're
phenomenal.
Strapped to World War I era, like, bailing wire and, you know, plywood airplanes. So
airplane. Back when go ahead.
It's real bad. Like, building a jet fighter is a suicidal exercise, which is why I enjoy it so much.
Perfect. So what can people get from this Kickstarter? Like, what are the levels and what can people expect to see?
So the basic level is like, you know, $15 or whatever. Or if you're having a hard time, I understand. You know, I've been there. There's a $6 level for a PDF of just the game and all the stretch goals.
That's cool.
So you can play it if you have a tablet or a laptop or whatever. Mm-hmm. Or you play over the internet like everybody else. This game is very easy to run over the internet.
All right, awesome.
Like, all my tests have done it. The thing that you do is you open a Google Draw file and you put the JPEG of the instrument panel in it.
Okay.
And you just move the tokens around on it like it was your tabletop.
Oh, all right. I can see that. That's cool.
Yeah, and then the levels ascending from that are, there's a softcover book. All the levels have the option to get some, like, nice printouts of the pre-made planes and playbooks.
Okay.
And then the there's a hardcover version of it, and then the crazy tiers are if you want to have your nose art somewhere in the game, paste it on the side of an airplane prominently displayed, or like on a page dedicated to like look at nose art from weird pilots across this setting, like, you know, I can work with you to do that and like incorporate it into the setting.
That's pretty rad. It's a great way to allow people to have a piece of the game for themselves.
Yeah, you just don't want to be my dad who, when he heard that you could do that, sent me a picture of Snoopy sitting on top of the doghouse, and I was like, you see there, copyright.
I think you could draw illegally distinct from Snoopy.
Oh yeah, we settled on what if I drew the beagle like really realistically sitting on top of a doghouse on the side of a plane.
Yeah, or just make him not a beagle, but still a Snoopy adjacent sort of dog.
Yeah.
Just like give him
the one above that. If you hate money, and I understand, I love money, so we can maybe make an exchange happen here. Is you can get you come to me with a pitch for an airplane, and I will put it in the game, like build it out as a pre-made airplane. So not only will it be in some of the art in the book, and I will build a really snazzy 3D model of it to make it look really cool in the book. It will be in the pre-made airplanes that everyone can download and play the game with.
Wow, that's a great option for folks who hate money. Now, any folks who hate money and are our listeners have already given most of their money to us. But if you're listening and you're unbelievably rich, then that's a great option for you.
Yeah, if you're Ray Liotta.
If you're Ray Liotta, then really you should be joining our Patreon at the Ray Liotta tier. And it's amazing to me that you haven't already. It's there. It's for you, Ray Liotta.
I think if you really, really hate money, I think I'm going to have a Bloomplagers is your dad tier at the last hour of the Kickstarter.
So that's been in our most recent episode when we did our pitch for this, because we were really hoping to get our content included in the game. We introduced the concept of Blimplagers is your dad, the tier, where Blimplagers itself will show up at your house and call you sport.
Yeah, Blimplagers is your dad now.
So
he loves your mom, and he's not trying to replace anyone else, but he is your dad now.
He finally came back with those cigarettes. So
that
would be a fun
too. He's
going
to teach you to ride a bike.
That's right. He'll be there when the training wheels come off, sport. So, okay, so you've got a lot of good tiers, and as we've already mentioned, it's doing spectacularly well, but there are about 22 days left to get in on it and get yourself copies of the game as of time of recording. That'll probably be closer to 2 weeks left by the time this actually comes out, so if you're listening right now, get out there and support it before you lose the chance.
Before it fades away forever, yeah, until it goes up on DriveThruRPG.
Now, do you have a sort of timeline for when you expect that to happen, or are we looking at like a Gareth Michael Skarka situation here?
Well, I have a timeline that I'm fairly confident in where I can get this thing to people by like the August, September thing. But like I was a little optimistic in the setting of the tiers, especially now that I've received piles of money that will enable me to like continue development for a little longer than I expected and really polish it up. But sort of by the end of the year for sure. Like I have other games I want to write, so you know, I will endeavor to get this out of the door so that I can work on Magical Girl games.
Well, of course, I mean, naturally, and again, there's no reason not to combine the two, because I believe we've already mentioned that there's definitely a Strike Witches tier in this game.
Yep.
Where the Strike Witches will definitely be in it. All of them by name and with their underwear out, as intended in the first place.
Just completely the lewdest art you can imagine. Like, mm-hmm. the same effort of 3D modeling airplanes has gone into,
now I'm
like,
back on board.
Rendering the curves.
Now, John, of course, very curious to see if he can get a Strike Witch that's hanging dong added to the game.
Obviously.
Yeah. And how much is that going to reduce the airspeed of that Strike Witch?
So there's two ways to interpret that, and both of them are very funny to me, because the first is just like a big dude among all of these, you know, fucking Japanese schoolgirls in plain bits, just mm-hmm. like, yo, what's up? I'm Frank. I'm a Strike Witch. And the other one is like, well, at least we're getting trans representation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Either way, why not both?
Yeah,
¿por qué no los dos?
Yeah, we've got trans representation, and then we've got that one guy that like applies to Hooters and he's laughing about it, and then he realizes that they actually will hire him. It's that guy. I applied to these Strike Witches as a joke. Turns out the uniform leaves very little to the imagination.
Yeah. They did not compensate for that.
Also, it turns out these aren't just like pants I'm wearing. They cut your feet off.
Yeah, this is straight amputate.
Very uncomfortable with this entire thing. I wish I had not done this.
Oh, God. Strike Witches is a nightmare, and an anime was a mistake.
So now I have a tough question for you, and it's okay to say no to this, but here's the thing. We have already announced on our own media channels that we are running a Blimpleggers game at Gen Con this year.
Oh, crap. Well, I'm going to Gen Con.
And we announced this before you made any kind of announcements of your own.
Okay.
Our goal at the moment, what it's written up as on the Gen Con site, is that we'll be running the game. And by the way, I can cut this section if it doesn't work out. Our paperwork on the Gen Con section says we'll be running it in the Strike engine. But if we can run it in your engine, that would be just as good. So if you have prototype materials by August.
Absolutely. No, 100%. I'm going to Gen Con anyway. I will sit by the table and, like,
correct us.
Shake my fist at you every time you make a mistake with my beautiful, elegant system.
Well, good.
System mastery!
We'll have to let our handlers know that we're switching that game from Strike to a Flying Circus.
Our handlers?
Yeah. James is definitely our handler at this point. That's the official title, I think.
It's nice that there's, like, one responsible adult in this organization.
we're like, 15 years older than him.
One responsible adult. Well, two. Probably. I think I trust Kat.
Yeah, I definitely trust Kat.
I trust Kat more than James, honestly.
Now that I thought about it for even like a quarter of a second, you're entirely correct.
The only thing is that the reason that we use James as our handler is because he's the only one of the two of them that's willing to talk to us.
He's the only one that likes us over there. Everyone else thinks we're weird.
They're like, James, why did you let these guys in? They're the worst. And he's like, I don't know. They just appeal to me in a way I can't define.
There's just something about them, and I can't get them out of my head.
They're the cheesecake of people.
So yeah, hopefully we can make that happen. I mean, we're prepared to do that strike game one way or the other. Or, I'm sorry, not that strike, that Blimplakers game one way or the other. But it would be awesome to be running it in an official system. So we'll talk about that soon.
Yeah, no, that sounds fun as hell.
Yeah. So otherwise, is there anything else about the Kickstarter you'd like people to know? Again, it's going to have about 2 weeks left at this point. How can they find it?
You can find it by typing in Flying Circus. Maybe I should talk like a little bit about like setting and characters and stuff, because like to me, all I care about is planes and mechanics. But my people around me keep going like, your setting is so cool. Why do you never talk about it? I thought it was just like a World War One game.
Oh, well, yeah, by all means, please tell everybody about the setting.
And I always go like, you care about that stuff? It's the fucking nerd tax. It's the stuff I used to pad the book. So Flying Circus takes place in sort of a fantasy, not Germany sort of thing, which is Germany because I wanted like pony hats and stone beer glasses and, you know.
Oh, yeah, gotta have
elves.
Steins and pretzels. Yeah, okay.
Lederhosen.
Mountain goats.
Where basically the world
the
has
mountain
ended.
Goats. The band, the mountain goats is there.
Oh, sorry.
It's fine. It's fine. John was just working in some material.
Okay, cool. Because I just got like so.
No, it's fine.
Okay. The civilization ended in the last Great War and everything was awful. But like, you know, all the cities went up in a huge mist of poison gas. But out in the boonies, it's kind of actually okay. Maybe. You know, like the world ended, but it's not the end of the world.
I get that. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's bad stuff out there, but it's not like people are tearing each other apart for a loaf of bread. And it's what enables them to pay mercenaries like you to go out and like reclaim bits of civilization and try to stem the tide of like weird shit that got unleashed at the end of the last Great War. And you have to do it as biplane pilots in biplanes that were obsolete before the war ended. So in these like baling wire and plywood planes. So the game is you have 8 different playbooks, like, you know, the Powered by the Apocalypse archetypes of like all the different places you might be from in the post-apocalypse. So like maybe you're from a bombed out city and you wear a gas mask all the time and you're struggling to identify with other human beings and like make human connections. Or maybe you're just a farmer who is like Luke Skywalker with the serial numbers filed off. And you sort of, you know, make connections with one another, fly incredibly dangerous missions, and then get home with piles of stress and have to work it off by like drinking a lot and doing stupid things.
Yeah. What else is there to do in tiny like alpine German villages anyway, right?
Exactly. So the when you're landed, the two parts of the game that matters are like dealing with your horrible finances, which is like upkeep based and like not super punishing, like not quite like red markets or anything, but enough that like you have a bad mission, you're like, oh god, who am I firing? And because your airplanes just like drink money because they're horrible.
I assume you have to have a whole garage full of crew.
Yeah, exactly. And the other thing that you do is you drink off stress using a system that's basically like you start that phase of the game by rolling dice to drink, and it generates a number of dares for you. Like, you get to choose some, and the GM get to choose some. If you want the stress to go away, you have to do whatever the dare is. So, like, you're incentivized now to, like, pick fights. Go, you know, talk up some girl at the bar. Like, you know, punch your rival. Do something incredibly dangerous. Deliberately antagonize local authority. Like, that kind of thing. So, like, every time you land somewhere, you make a mess of things and strain the goodwill of the people who are paying you incredible amounts of money to protect their lifestyle.
Nice. So they tend to regard you as dirty mercenaries, and no one ever wants you to stay in town.
Yeah, it's like, you arrive as heroes, because, like, you're literally a flying circus. The circus is in town, you arrive, like, streaming banners. If you've got a Zeppelin, it's done up like a circus tent. Like, it's
ooh, that's great.
Ridiculous. And everyone's like, yay, these people have arrived, and they're bringing so much money and business, and, you know, like, you're getting paid by the mayor or whatever, and inevitably like redistributing it to the bartenders and prostitutes and stuff. So like everybody loves you as this payday, and then you're there for 2 weeks and everyone's like, oh my god, why are these fuckers still here?
So it's an actual circus. So the name is a two-part thing. I like that. That's good. So when you come to town, you're not just flying dangerous missions, but also doing like barnstorming for the entertainment of the masses and what have you.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Or like, the dangerous missions that you do don't necessarily have to be like, you know, flying to shoot down some clockwork soldiers or anything like that. Like, there's a mission generator table that the GM is encouraged to roll on. That stuff like deliver the mail to the next town through a dangerous mountain pass, or like scout something out, or like go out in a helicopter and drag back the engine of the town's only airplane when it crashed. And so like a lot of the missions can be resolved really quickly and then just get back to the drinking. And then you go up for like one of the big ones and everything goes terrible. One of your friends catches fire, you know, your airplane shudders back onto the airfield and falls apart. You know, everybody's wounded and covered in oil, and you are just exhausted, and you tear the town apart looking for catharsis.
All right, well, that's awesome. So let's see. I love the setting, and John is letting me know that we have a lot of questions to answer.
Yes.
Ooh, goody.
Yeah. So John, you want to take care of the asking since you've got them open?
Yeah. And let's go ahead and get to our questions. Of course, it is an afterthought, so we need to do dumb questions. We asked probably about an hour ago for some questions specifically to Blimplager or Flying Circus on Twitter, and we got a lot. So,
all right, great. So I love how active our fan base is at this point. You know what, fans, if you're listening right now, punch whoever's to the left of you. Thanks.
Does this loop around? Because I'm sitting alone.
Yes.
If you're sitting alone, punch yourself. But you don't have to do it. You're not listening. You're participating.
I guess that's true.
Too late. All right, so first question from @Infocorn. How did you decide to do Powered by the Apocalypse versus other hack-friendly systems like Fate, Gumshoe, or whatever, / not do your own dice and stat deal?
So this is going to be applying to two different or to three different people in two different ways, because I'm part of it is why did we hawk out Blimpleggers, and part of it is why are you doing a PBTA system? So why don't we start with you?
Okay, cool. So the reason I did PBTA is because it actually worked for what I wanted to do. Like, I'm not afraid of writing my own systems. It's only been recently that I've been using Powered by the Apocalypse for things. My main reason for using Powered by the Apocalypse is that I like it and I don't like Fate.
I can see that.
Fair.
Yeah, that's fair.
But, like, the other thing is that, like, the way that moves and the conversation are structured is what drew me to it, with the realization that, like, oh, airplane combat works in this. Like, you don't have to make the inputs like super granular and like, you know, do you turn and then swoop to the left or whatever, because it's, you know, Powered by the Apocalypse. You can just say what your airplane does and maybe it will activate a move.
Yeah, you can do cool things. You can say like, I'm doing a high yo-yo, or I'll dive out of the sun.
Yeah, exactly. And like, that will just like activate moves as it goes. And I mean, this game is like, the term I use when I do this is Powered by the Apocalypse. Like, it's okay. D10 based. It's like got an instrument panel sheet with like 30 weird numbers on it. You roll hit locations, which I know, calm down. It's okay. It's cool.
No, it's fine. Airplanes should have hit locations. People shouldn't, but airplanes should.
Cool.
Yeah.
So like,
that's where you draw the line. Airplane should have hit locations.
Every single time in my entire life I've drawn a line, John, it's because there's airplanes.
Yeah, because I've been drawing airplanes.
Or dinosaurs. It's, well, one of those.
Honestly, the worst thing about hit locations is always all the times it's like, oh, you didn't actually hit something because they were behind a wall and their arm would have been behind a wall. Like, people don't like stand like a cardboard cutout so only certain parts of them are visible and certain parts aren't. They're moving behind that wall.
Yeah, well, a large part of what drives us away from hit location as system mastery in general is that usually it's just like step two on an 18-step, way too big flowchart.
Yeah, I always try to design it so you can roll the hit location dice at the same time you roll your attack.
Yeah, which is perfectly fine. The moment you're getting into like that fatal style hit location where it's like, all right, you hit someone in the midsection. We've established that the midsection is the groin. We've established that the groin is the anus. We've established a number of poop chunks that are going to fall out. It's just too many things, and it just slows the game down instead of making it as exciting and visceral as they were hoping.
Yeah.
But if you're keeping it simple with hit location, it's a tool that can work.
And it's so satisfying when, like, you know, somebody shoots like the last belt of ammunition that they have, and it just chunks the other plane's engine off, and, you know, it catches fire, and you're just like, yes, oh my god. Or conversely, you fire your last belt of ammunition and it whizzes through blank canvas, and you're like, oh, well, time to try to ram them, maybe.
So, or throw a brick at them if it's a World War I airplane.
Oh, yeah, you can do that. Small arms fire? Yeah.
Yeah. So the reason that we decided to go forward with blimpleggers is because I have no impulse control at all. So I just...
Oh, yeah, the amount of times that things have happened on this show where Jeff does it, and then he's like, hey, John, I did a thing. That's the thing we have to do now.
Uh-huh. That's me.
Like this interview.
Exactly. I have no memory. I have, and I also have no idea or no sense of future planning. So I'm just sort of a random collection of up to the moment decisions. But when it comes to the other half of the question, why didn't we write our own blimpleggers rule set? I don't know how. I spent a lot of time sitting around goofing around with dice mechanics and things, and almost all of them just turned into, you know, just tricks. It's just like, oh, roll a handful of D6s and see if you can assemble poker hands. And, you know, each time I'd present it to John, and John would be like, that's dumb. It would take forever.
That's dumb. You know this.
And I'd be like, you're right. See, I guess it's a curse for the two of us that having read like 120 game systems, we've seen every single way you can roll a handful of D6s. And we're like, I don't feel like there's a new one in there that's going to come to the two of us anytime soon. So we wanted to go with an established designer. That's why.
For a little while, my early role-playing game writing effort was like every 3 days I would release a new game that was some variation on rolling a different number of D6s and moving some tokens around.
Mm-hmm.
So like I think that I independently explored every single one of those. So like between the two of us, maybe we can make something happen here.
There could probably be a new engine in there somewhere. Okay, John, next All right. question. Fire away.
So next question from @theconstant23. How much danger is hydrogen accidents a la the Hindenburg?
I can tell you the blimpleggers answer. Because, Erica, you haven't really gotten super into the blimpleggers lore yet. But
no.
One of the big things about blimpleggers is that there's no petroleum reserves anywhere to be found. No one's sure why, but they just aren't out there. What there are instead, though, are universally rich reserves of helium in a variety of pockets throughout the world. So the blimps of blimpleggers are helium. So the risk of explosion from hydrogen gas bags is super low. Now, in terms of real-world Zeppelins, I think that's something that's more your speed.
Yeah, hydrogen explodey, and because Flying Circus is a fantasy world where I can do whatever the fuck I want, nobody can stop me, there's a, like, you can build helium ones, which have less lift but are safe. You can build mm-hmm. hydrogen ones, which have lots of lift and will catch fire, or you can build ones filled with a like alchemic solution called luftane, which it doesn't catch fire, which is nice because it's like hideously acidic, and when exposed to oxygen becomes a liquid. So
ooh, that's nasty.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. You can absolutely just make things up to your heart's content and put the.
But
and
it
put those
provides
in the aspects.
A lot of lift. So if you want to build like a Final Fantasy flying battleship, like that's what you use.
That's awesome. So there you go. The chance of hydrogen explosions is high, of course, although not as high as you might think when it comes to old hydrogen like Zeppelins and stuff. Those things would often land after sorties on the British, completely riddled with bullet holes, but not having caught on fire.
No, it's because they would have like multiple, you know, like different balloons, and they often would design them in ways that they would seal or leak slowly. And they would also, they could be in situations where they wouldn't be exposed to enough oxygen to combust properly. And, it was like pretty difficult to shoot down a Zeppelin.
It really was. Yeah. And part of it, this is something I really like when looking into airship combat, is that they operate at such altitudes that the pressure inside the gas bag is not especially high compared to the outside environment. So when you shoot a hole in it, the hydrogen just doesn't leave. There's nothing compelling it to leave.
Yeah. Generally speaking, like, the fire rules in Flying Circus are horrifying. Your plane catching fire is, like, the worst thing that can happen to you.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
a blimp is pretty safe unless they hit you with, like, a bomb.
Yeah, absolutely. Unless they, like, sever the... Well, in terms of... A blimp is certainly very safe because a lot of the works are inside the gas bag. But if you're talking about, like, an airship or something, then you could always cut the airship off.
Yeah. Just drop the gondola right the fuck off the thing.
Exactly.
Yeah, that would suck, man. Don't be in, like, I love airplanes, but, like, don't be in one when somebody's trying to make you not be an airplane anymore.
Yeah, that fall is a doozy. What else we got, John?
All right, coming from @itsatraplol, what type of scarf do you recommend for young pilots looking into their future careers of dashing, daring, do?
What type of scarf, I'm sorry?
Yes.
Oh, goodness. Well, geez, I mean, obviously the classic is the way too long white one.
Yeah, silk.
Yeah, way too long of a white silk scarf is definitely the right thing to do if you're just starting out.
I don't want wool or anything scratchy, because you're going to be moving your head around a lot and you're just going to chafe like nothing's business.
Yeah,
I think I would go style over substance. Just get a nice feather boa. Get up there, and mm-hmm. I want you to shoot down people while you look fabulous.
That's true. Now, let me just tell you, this is one situation where I would argue against the wisdom of Oprah. Do not get an infinity scarf. It's not going to look cool, and it's going to get caught on things.
Yeah, and if you're flying a pusher plane, cut that scarf short. Like, otherwise, it's going to get ugly.
Yeah, you don't want to get caught in the props. So so make sure you measure your scarf relative to the distance from the propellers you're going to be operating. Same thing if you're flying an autogyro, for example, because autogyros don't push air down, they pull it up.
Yeah, don't have an ejector seat on a helicopter or an autogyro also.
Yeah, that's definitely true.
Related.
Hey, you can have an ejector seat, you just eject down.
Well, the thing about an autogyro is that if you cut the power to it, it just falls gently to the ground like a maple leaf. So it's not something where you even want an ejector seat, because you're already better off with it.
Yeah, I mean, 90% of the time, you're better off in the plane than out of it.
That is very true. So, so there you go. We got a lot of good scarf recommendations for you there.
All right, from @Saylorn, do you expect a lot of blimp-to-blimp combat? And if so, is everyone supposed to have their own blimp, or is everyone going to be on the same blimp?
Well, if you're having blimp-to-blimp combat, then everyone can't be on the same blimp. You have to have at least two. That's blimp-to-blimp combat. But ultimately, when we're talking blimp-leggers, it's like pirates is basically the concept behind what we're trying to go for. So you may see a group of blimp-leggers that have two blimps, but mostly if you're playing as a crew, so everyone's on the same blimp and you're being chased by enemy blimps.
Yeah.
So for us, a lot of it's going to be people operating deck guns or literally just shooting off the side of their gondola or their the boat that's on top or on the bottom. I've got all kinds of blimp designs in my head. So it's going to be a lot of gunfire combat between blimps and boarding actions.
Yes. Perfect. Yeah. And the rules are really good for that. Like the multi-seat planes is like something that's really encouraged. And like if somebody comes in, looks at the instrument panel and goes like, I don't understand how to do this and I do not want to learn. You say like, oh, cool. You can be in the gunner's seat. And like when the engine breaks, you have to wing walk out and fix it. Like there's still plenty of opportunity to be badass and not a pilot.
Perfect.
I'm sorry. I just, for some reason, thought Shaka when the wing breaks. And
you're just doing some. I'm just over there doing Star Trek.
I'm in my own little world where I know about things. All right. Next question comes from @AuthorX. Will the blimplagers have some kind of magic or super abilities, or will it be specific to the hooch? Is the magic hooch useful while flying, or more just as cargo/contraband?
Well, I have answers to all of that in terms of lore for the Blimplaggers universe, but I do not know how that would directly connect to the...
Well, let's just talk Blimplaggers universe
all right,
real quick.
So in the Blimplaggers universe, there are... Hooch is actually one of four primary applications of magic that are found throughout the Not America that is the setting, which is... Vespia is what we call it. It's basically Not America and the Not 1920s. Hooch crafting, or the making or imbuing of potions out of alcohol, is an expression of alchemy, which is one of the four guilds of magic that exist there that are actually more like unions than guilds. The whole idea is that wizards in this world are basically teamsters. So the other three are electricians, which have replaced the electrical power generation for the most part that's found in steam engines and so on. Steam engines exist and people can use them, but just as common is to just hire a guild electrician and have them stay on board your ship and keep things running. Kinematics, which is the study of arcane filmmaking. So a kinematic wizard will spend his time crafting illusions of special effects or giving people glow trails and so on to make sure that their airplane looks perfect, creating golden hour lighting conditions so that they can find the perfect shot. And communications, because the telecoms industry in the world of Vespia does not exist. It's wizards connecting people from one to the other.
It's wizards all the way down.
It's wizards all the way down in those four arenas. And you can, at least at the moment, the idea behind this game is that there are four playbooks that exist, or that will exist, that represent one each of the four primary magic unions.
Yeah, so answer the is magic huge useful while flying, there is an entire class that is just a dude who throws magic booze around, so yes.
Yeah, the Hooch Slinger is entirely, basically a magic bartender who flings healing potions or kind of jump juice and what have you to make to give people temporary boosts in combat. In terms of PBTA, he probably will have moves that relate to him getting boosts in exchange for helping out other players.
And I mean, like, this is a game that already has drinking rules. Like, yeah. it will sync very well.
Yeah. Now, in terms of the potions being useful in combat, they always are. Potions more or less come in two forms in Vespia. There's fun ones, which is what everyone wants, and the reason that there's blimplaggers at all is you have potions that do things like make you breathe bubbles or turn you pink briefly or keep your feet 2 inches off the ground. And people love those because they're great party drinks. But there are also ones that make you stronger or make you faster or jump up your reflexes, which people want to use in combat. They tend to have illicit or illegal combat applications. So yeah, there's both, and you'll see people using them throughout the world. It's also a wonderful excuse for pun, because almost every potion that exists in Blimplaggers is just some cocktail that's a joke. Like, did you want to?
I have a really important question myself. What's the like sexual aid potion scene look like?
I mean, it's the 1920s. The speakeasies have been replaced with flaskeasies. If you want to have one that's basically the equivalent of a D&D friends spell or something like that, my only thing is...
Oh, no, there is a boner potion. It's called Whiskey Dick.
Yes, it's just all I wanted. Thank you.
Yeah, it just does the opposite of what you think.
Yeah, you're welcome.
So yeah, it exists. That's the basic answer. I mean, a lot of my inspiration for what the Flask Easy space looks like is from that, you know, that Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them movie when they go to the bar?
Yeah.
That space, the potions are like that. They do fun little party applications if you're just sort of an average schmo who's tired from a day of work.
And there is actually one more question on this tweet, and that's going to sort of apply to everyone, which is, how does the complexity or pacing change with a team on a blimp compared to the normal flying circus?
I have no idea.
So, basically, it's you assign all of the complicated shit to one person to be the pilot, and everybody else runs around and is dumb. Like, my experience with multiple aircraft crew is that, like, all of the parts of this game that are slightly more to the margins of, like, walking on wings and throwing stuff out of the side of the plane and doing dangerous stuff that isn't necessarily smart gets amplified a great deal when you play with multiple people in the same aircraft, because you're not just focused on your instrument panel and like making sure everything's perfect. So find the nerd on your team to like, well, the biggest nerd to be the pilot, and he can have fun playing with his numbers, and you fucking tie a rope around your ankles and dive off the airplane onto another blimp, and like, I don't know, with two bottles of booze in either hand that when mixed together will explode the other blimp.
Yeah, absolutely. That's kind of, in terms of the way I envision Blimplaggers combat, a lot of it is repelling boarders or boarding other ships to take things or being attacked by flying monsters and having to fight them off from the deck of the blimp.
I talked about dragons and flying circus? Because that's a thing.
I mean, in the Blimplaggers universe, the villain is, for the most part, the biggest villain of all is the
police.
Is man. No, it's the police force that's the anti-prohibition police force, which is comprised of mushroom people that hate alcohol because it hurts them. And when they are chasing you, they will fire harpoons and howsers at you that will allow them to run over and board the blimp and get in sword fights with you.
Oh, man. I just, you know, in Moana, the little coconut guys that are the war boys?
Yeah.
Like, that would be amazing in flight.
It absolutely would. So, I mean, in terms of what the players do, you don't, in Blimplaggers, when I was very originally writing down what I wanted from it, to me, it wasn't even important that someone flew the blimp. That if no one wanted that job, then it was fine, because the ship's got a crew of 16. You're just not one of the players, don't include the captain or the pilot or whatever. It didn't matter. But if you had someone who wanted to fly it, then it should be functional for them to fly it as well.
Cool. I will keep that in mind, and that'll be easy to do.
Sure.
I think we've probably got time for another question or two.
Oh, after editing, absolutely.
So, at Dippy Munch asks, is there an end game in mind? What can an aspiring legger hope to retire to?
Well, I mean,
I assume it's basically the same as if you were a pirate. You're like, you get enough money and eventually you're just like, all right, time to go I don't know, get drunk somewhere.
I mean, basically, the best way to view blimpleggers is, what if pirates and rum runners from the 1920s were the same thing? And you know, you look at the guys like Al Capone and so on, or Lucky Luciano, and generally speaking, they would retire through either getting rich and disappearing from public life, or getting syphilis and dying in prison, or getting a bullet in the eye.
Which does bring us to the syphilis rules of the game.
Now, there's an extremely complicated set of rules for controlling whether or not your character has syphilis and how bad of syphilis your character has.
Spoiler alert, everyone has syphilis.
Everyone has syphilis. The real question is whether or not they have gonorrhea. Now, if they have gonorrhea, then they have to roll a D6 for the... it's a D10 system. They have to roll a D10 each morning to determine the amount of burning and the location.
Yeah, that's where the location chart comes in.
You're saying this is a joke, and there's gears turning in my head. Like, how could I simulate sexually transmitted infection in a role-playing game? How could I make that fun and interesting and have choices?
Yeah, but ultimately, I mean, it's just like being a pirate or a rum runner. It's not a career that anyone enters into with retirement in mind. If they do retire, they're the 1 in 100 who's lucky enough to score big, get the most money, get the most booze, buy a private island somewhere, and disappear from the world.
All right. Got a question from @BDClark. Are you going to put all your in-jokes into Blimplaggers or save some for later?
What are the I mean, Blimplaggers is... For all the silliness of the name, which is a really stupid and silly name...
Well, I mean, given that Blimplaggers itself was... originally an in-joke.
I mean, the whole point, yeah, the very early story of what became Blimplaggers is someone sent us a question for an old afterthought that was, hey guys, I want to run a game for my friends, and the campaign I would like to run is this, and they keep wanting to add blimps and stuff to it, and I think that's dumb. Can you please help me write a fun setting that doesn't have stupid blimps in it? And we were like, no, lean way into the blimps.
100%
the blimps are your friend.
All blimps, all the time, everywhere's blimps. And that's where Blimplaggers originally came from. I mean, are we gonna work in? Is Eric gonna work in stuff like donkey talk and what have you? I don't know. I mean, it certainly is.
Yes.
Well, there you go. There's your answer.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's in fantasy Germany for the main game, so you have to imagine that there's a lot of hot dog questions going on for people.
Oh my god.
Yeah. There's a number of hot dog questions. Of course, everyone's
dear
talking
Jeff
about
and John,
donkeys.
Would you eat a Frankfurter if it was dangling from 10,000 feet?
Would you jump out of a hot air balloon tied to a bungee cord if you could eat a hot dog at the bottom of the drop?
Would you eat a Frankfurter if it was not constructed with perfect Prussian engineering?
Oh gosh, no.
The answer is of course no. If you say yes, you will be tried and hanged.
So I would assume that you'll probably see a number of the bigger names System Mastery in jokes worked in there.
No, I'm going full obscure. I'm gonna go back through the early afterthoughts. I'm like,
oh, we're getting Wowzer on the side of a plane
and just mine them for stuff. You're gonna regret every dumb joke you ever made because they're all going on the page. They will last for eternity.
One of the villains is going to be Dash Limburger now.
That is a good fucking name for a villain, I'll tell you.
All right.
We'll get probably one more.
Yeah, let's do one more. How far have you planned the Blimplaggers meta plot? I'm looking to commit.
Oh, it's Torg. It's Torgian.
You cannot affect the meta plot.
Yeah, the metaplot is completely sacrosanct and unmovable in any way.
However, let me tell you about my DM NPC that is definitely the most important thing.
Drizzt Blimper.
Okay, so there's two options there, and one is just Drizzt on a Blimper. The other is Drizzt that is like blimp shaped.
Yeah, it's blimp. That's Blimpminster.
No, L Blimpster. Come on now.
L Blimpster, who is in fact a wizard blimp.
Oh, no, it's just some lady. It's Elle Blimpster. She's legally blonde.
No, I'm just picturing it as sort of a Zorro analog. I am Elle Blimpster. But wait, what was the original metaplot?
Blimplaggers metaplot.
I mean, this is something I actually have not even given to Erica yet, which is the reams of backstory about the world and the setting, mostly because I have no idea how much of it you're actually going to need. I mean, I assume that Blimplaggers as an add-on is not going to be like a whole friggin' book of its own crap. Although I don't think I have that much.
No.
It will be.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well. All right. Well. Then. then I have a ridiculous amount of setting material. I've laid out most of the major cities of Vespia, most of the countries in the world, how the economics work. There's a whole bunch of meta plot out there that already exists.
I wrote one of my recent games and like went from a one page draft to a fully laid out game in 3 weeks. I will make you this book.
I can tell you one thing that we've already provided that is going to be a real pain in the butt to deal with is that Blimplaggers has species in it as opposed to, you know, the rest of the game, from what I understand, is you know, you're playing as everyone's the same thing. Even if they're not all humans, at least they're all, you know, furries or something, and their species doesn't matter. But Blimplaggers has 5 or 6 concrete species in it that are the inhabitants of Vespia that are all kind of unique and distinct and have their own personalities.
I've already worked it into the character sheets. You don't got to worry.
Well, there you go.
There you go. Perfect.
I mean, metaplot-wise, the setting isn't really like, here's how the story is going to unfold. It is definitely more like, here's the events that have happened up till now.
Mm-hmm.
How do you respond to it?
Yeah, it's set in a hazy, not 1920s, where everyone's running around dealing with this weird potion prohibition. There's no real end game to it. I mean, ultimately, it'll probably end the same way actual prohibition ended, which is that they'll write another constitutional amendment or get rid of the first one. But, you know, that's in the hazy future.
Yeah, that's like meta plots in RPGs are always usually a disaster. But one of the things that I've really come to really like in role playing games is the feeling that the age that the role playing game is taking part in place in isn't going to last forever. Like, mm-hmm. that was something I really liked in Red Markets, where they talked, you know, like a part of the background that would come up is like, you know, this is, you're getting in on this scam with the zombies now, because in 5 years it's all going to be over.
Oh, and, yeah. And that's something that's definitely true here. This is a gold rush moment in Vespian history. There's money to be made on these potions, but it can't last forever.
Yeah, Flying Circus itself is sort of the same way. Like, you guys are the second generation of Flying Circus pilots, and the mm-hmm. first generation was like, they've become like vaunted heroes now, because they were the people who like held back the dark at the worst times of the apocalypse. And most of the people who are in the Flying Circuses now are assholes taking advantage of that reputation to make a quick buck off the rural population.
Yeah, yeah. So I like that idea too. The idea that you're kind of playing that. Not in an hazy, endless Dungeons and Dragons style environment where you're just like, oh, I'm in the realms. The realms are there's things happening, but nothing important until such time as they release another edition of D&D. But rather that you're playing in this in the golden age, in the moment. You're in the zeitgeist. So, you know, like you're playing in the 60s and everyone's right now, everything's changing, man, and everyone's listening to Strawberry Alarm Clock, and it's just, this is the time and the place to be, and there's Hunter S. Thompson running around. That's kind of the thing that we're going for, is you're playing in right in the middle and in the thick of the coolest part of the setting, right?
Yeah.
All right. So there you go. I think we're all done with questions, especially because we've been going for like
one more that's very important.
Oh, fire away.
How do blimps wear leggings?
Oh, I'm sorry. I see you're also on the Twitter. How do?
Yeah. Well, there is an accompanying picture that I'm going to go ahead and show you, Jeff. Uh-huh. So, would they wear it like A or like B?
On the underside, first of all, those aren't leggings. Those are, like those are like Adidas track pants or something? What are we doing here?
Well, I don't think they could find a good leggings for Photoshop.
That's fair enough. I mean, okay, obviously we're going with B if Blimp is going to have to wear leggings. Because let's be clear, that looks like a beta fish. That's bad.
You could write a message on it and just tell the skies.
Yeah, but I like my fish to be alphas, you know what I mean? Red pill, going my own way, woo!
Ugh.
Fuck.
Yeah, it's been a while since we made fun of incel guys.
God. Every once in a while, I find myself in that part of the internet, and I'm, or like in the part of the internet that observes that part of the internet, rather, because like mm-hmm. I don't do deep dives like that anymore. And it's just like, God, remember when people on the internet were just like regular assholes?
Yeah, man, you've got to really define your niche of asshole at this point.
You do. It's like a. It's like going to an organic grocery store or something. It's not enough to be like, I need some sage. Now you have to know like 50 different kinds of sage.
I miss when people just wanted to upset you.
Yeah. I mean, at this point, we can't just make fun of incels anymore because they've split up again. And now you've got like alt-right incels and regular incels and vol cells.
Have you taken the black pill? Yeah.
I think there's even a group of people now that are super mad about, or that are incels that are super mad about that pill analogy from The Matrix, because someone finally made them realize that The Matrix was written by two trans people.
Oh God, that shit has pissed me off for so long, because like The Matrix was what made me connect to like feminism and stuff like that, and I would want to use that metaphor, and then I ran into those assholes and it ruined everything.
Right?
Damn you, internet, you've ruined everything again.
So there you have it. Otherwise, I'm going to go with option B, which is if a blimp is going to wear leggings, it's just hauling them in a trail behind it.
Yeah,
although
not dangling down below it.
Let's be real here. If you're going to build an airship with leggings in mind, then you're Baron Munchausen, and you're going to build it out of ladies' undergarments, and you're going to fly away into a magical land.
I was just about to say, maybe you build a blimp with legs.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh, a leg blimp.
So it can land and wild, wild west its way around the landscape.
I mean, the Blimp Leggers universe, originally had four types of blimps in it that were usable for players. I mean, there's an endless variety of blimp arrangements and so on that you're going to find in the world when you're flying around in it. But for players, there's, you know, a deck on the top of the blimp, deck on the bottom of the blimp, actual gondola blimp like the ones you've always seen before, and everyone is inside of the gas bag, where the four models.
And everyone's so high inside that gas bag.
Well, they're in the part of it that's full of regular air. We really got to talk more about how rigid, semi-rigid airships and ballonets and gas bags work at some point.
Yeah, we
John.
Really don't.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, you're right. Okay.
I'm willing to talk about it. Be my friend instead.
Deal. Insufficiently
and we'll
blimpy.
Each other's hair and talk about boys.
John is insufficiently blimpy. He is no longer my best friend. Now Erica is my best friend.
Friendship canceled with John.
I don't know how to do that meme because I haven't seen it often enough, but you know the one I'm talking about.
You know the ones.
So I think that's probably going to be it for the interview. Once again, folks, this is something that's near and dear to our hearts because it actually has our material in it. So please go to Kickstarter, find the Flying Circus Kickstarter and support it. You're going to get yourself a cool game that's just the sort of thing that I would want, which is flying around in airplanes and getting drunk. And also, you're going to, for the first time ever, actually get Blimp Leggers as a playable thing. So, and that's all thanks to our guest for today, Erica Chappell, who we want to thank very much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. And otherwise, as always, you can find us at SystemMasteryPodcast.com, System Mastery on Gmail, Facebook, Twitter, Reddit, Fur Affinity, DeviantArt, OKCupid, FetLife. What else we got, John? FarmersOnly.com, I think we did recently, yeah.
Did you do Christian Mingle?
We tried, and it turns out that there are certain aspects of my lifestyle that automatically get me rejected from creating the site.
However, we did get on
J-Date. What about the podcast, though? Does the is the podcast, like, monogamous, heterosexual, and... Of course not. No.
The podcast is both poly and queer. There's no getting around it.
Also, it's on J-Date because it is Jewish.
That's true. Although neither of us are. Weirdly, the podcast, very Jewish.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. The podcast's mother was Jewish, so...
The mother of the podcast, not actually on the podcast. Why would she be? She's its mom. She's off doing her own thing.
Yeah, well, you know, the podcast doesn't really call her, right?
She'll show up for the podcast bat mitzvah. Wait, does that mean the podcast is circumcised?
Of course it does.
Oh my gosh, I didn't even know.
Man, now I'm just... having an image that I can't get out of my head of a circumcised blimp. It's just with the airship with the front canvas removed.
Just the tip.
I was just picturing, actually, I just pictured all blimps as circumcised, and I was picturing an uncircumcised blimp, which is just that it has a lot more canvas that's taped up in the front.
No, that's the protective layering.
I'm freaking out Photoshop, and I'm drawing that right now.
Oh, yeah, definitely get that out. That's on a J-Date, our podcast blimp is described as 80 feet uncut.
That's actually kind of
a small blimp.
Where can the people find you, Erica?
You can find me. The main place that I want you to find me right now is the Flying Circus Kickstarter on Kickstarter.com, where you can kickstart my Kickstarter. Do that so you can play like a Cthulhu cultist who flies planes, because that's the thing. But if you want to find the real me when I'm not making blimp games, you can find me at Twitter at OpenSketchbook, @OpenSketchbook. Or you can find me on DriveThruRPG as Newsstand Press. That's all one word. Newsstand, like newsstand, but not, because 21-year-old me did not know how to spell, and I've turned it into a thing.
Oh, okay, so it's New Stand Press.
Yeah, but like one word, because, again...
Oh, that's fine. That just means you've got kind of a JoJo thing going on.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is my stand.
Yeah, now how much are we going to have to add for a stretch goal to add all kinds of JoJos to this game?
Oh, boy. Man, you mean other people would have to pay me to make that happen? Because, like, can I do the opposite? Like,
and basically what I'm talking about is a game where everyone's dressing as a insane queer Italian fashion plate, except in this case, all of their stands are airplanes.
Oh, my God. New stretch goal.
All right. So I'm going to skip the usual plea to go give us money on Patreon because this is just a special edition. But, you know, do go give us money on Patreon. Otherwise, thanks so much for listening, and I hope you all have a good week.
Give them money on Patreon. They deserve it. Think of baby, the Jeff baby.
The wee baby Aldrich, yeah.
The Jeff baby.